is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Tom Heil, head men's basketball coach at Baldwin Wallace University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
5-point plan. Point one, no one actually plays organized basketball before fourth grade. That's radical. Okay. Point number two, fourth through seventh grade is only played 3-on-3, half court, no 5-on-5 in organized basketball until after seventh grade.
Tyler Costin is the head of player development for PGC basketball. Tyler coached the women's basketball team at Trinity Western University from 2005 to 2007. While simultaneously running a skill development program that produced 5 Division I athletes. In 2007, he accepted a position as an assistant coach at Portland State University. During his first year at Portland State, the Vikings won the Big Sky Conference with an overall record of 23-8. After Portland State captured the Big Sky Conference tournament, they went to the NCAA tournament where they lost to the eventual 2008 champions, the Kansas Jayhawks. Tyler, a master director with PGC Basketball, first attended Point Guard College in 1998. Under the leadership of Dick DiVenzio. In the following year, Tyler led Linden Christian High School to the Washington State Championship and earned first-team All-State honors. He went on to play university basketball at Trinity Western University, where he was named to the Canada West All-Rookie Team. He transferred to the University of Alberta and led the Golden Bears to Canada West Gold, earning a spot in the national tournament in 2004. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing. So don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, Courtside Culture, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavaliers Central, Knuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, the Wizards Hoops Analyst, Lakers Fast Break, At the Buzzer, and Daily Thunder. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Have pen and paper by your side as you listen to this episode about improving youth basketball with Tyler Costin from PGC. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Lindzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this afternoon, but I am pleased to be joined by Tyler Costin, Director of Player Development at PGC Basketball. We're going to talk some youth basketball today. Tyler, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Man, pleasure to be here. I'm glad that this is important to you as it is to me.
It is very important. Just to kind of give people the background, got an email from PGC Basketball, and Tyler had written an article about 20 ways that we can improve youth basketball. Anybody who has spent any time as a member of our audience here on the Hoopheads pod knows that it is a subject that I care deeply about, trying to improve the youth basketball system here in the United States. How can we make it better? And Tyler's article gave us 20 ways that we can do that. And so we're going to go through each of those one at a time and just talk about some different things that we can do to make youth basketball here in the United States a better place for everybody. So let's begin. The way we decided we're going to do this is I'm going to read off each of the 20 ways that Tyler put in his article, and then he's going to respond and fill in some details. So we're going to start with number one, bring your A game. Youth basketball deserves our best, the best coaching, the most resources, the highest standards, yet we give it the least experienced coaches, no funding, few standards. Time to stop being lackluster and give it the care it deserves. Kids first. All right, fill in the details.
Yeah, you know, I think it really just comes down to care and investment. You know, a lot of times because the product isn't as appealing to watch, a youth basketball game versus, say, a high-level college game or a pro game, I think we give it less care and less investment. And I think we just have it backwards because more people play, more human beings play basketball at the youth level than at the higher levels. I mean, we tell high school players all the time that they've got a 5% chance of playing in college. And so I just really care about the game, and not selfishly for what I like watching the most, but because I want to grow the game and grow the love of the game. And I think most coaches, most basketball people, most basketball parents would agree with that in theory. So we just got to put our money where our mouth is and invest in impact. You know, the coaching at the youth level is hard. It's easy to point out the flaws in a player's game or in a basketball game, but it's harder to find a way to fix it. And that's why it requires better coaching.
So how do we do that? A couple things I know that have been considered are, one, USA Basketball is trying to put together their licensure program for youth coaches. And it's something that if you go and you participate in that and you become a licensed coach, you're going to get a lot of great information that can certainly help you. That's one of the things. And I think the other counter argument to what you said, and you hear from program directors, is, hey, a lot of our coaches are volunteers. If we start requiring them to take coursework or get certified, we're going to scare them away and they're going to not want to be a part of it because already we're asking them to volunteer and now we're going to force them to take a class. So how do we combat that in terms of coach education? What's your thought on how we get that going?
Yeah. You know, always add more in value than you take in payment. If what you're taking in payment is a person's time, then you've got to add more in value in some way. And I think that it, at the end of the day, is going to be on the program. It's going to be on the rec league, is going to be on the organization that has these coaches to make it so unbelievably positive, encouraging, edifying. They're going to make it easy for them to grow and not just send them a link to a YouTube video that feels like an assignment, but actually add value to them that might make them a better leader in their vocation and profession, will give them a community that encourages them and supports them, that, you know, it will help them achieve their long-term goals in coaching. You know, whatever it is, I think that's what is required. That would be our best. That would be our A game, as opposed to just being like, gosh, we got to get a coach for little Timmy's team. We'll roll anybody out there. I think it's just more of an approach, and the methods will vary if we make that commitment, if each individual program director makes that commitment.
Right. And I do think that not only then would we be improving youth basketball for the kids, but we're also going to be improving it for
the coaches. And if the experience is better for coaches, then you're going to have them stick around and you're going to get, make it easier for more people to want to be a part of it. I know you've probably heard, and I've heard from talking to coaches, they get frustrated because they're not sure what to do, or they can't get the kids to do this, or, you know, I'm not really sure what I'm doing. And if you gave them a foundation that enabled them to become better coaches themselves, one, they would enjoy it more. And two, they'd be able to pass that joy on to the kids that they're coaching.
Absolutely.
All right. Number two, we're going to skip this one. I'm going to read it, but we're going to leave it for the end because I think it lends itself to a question that will nicely summarize everything that we're going to talk about for the remainder of the podcast. So number two says, question everything. Youth basketball is broken. Start over. Players are leaving the sport. Parents are fighting in the stands, and kids are losing self-esteem instead of gaining confidence. So we're going to leave that one for the end and move on to number three, which is establish first principles, development over everything. North America has it backwards. Winning a game, making a team, or getting more playing time dictates decisions. Play the long game. Practices would be better if we didn't care about a fourth grade victory.
Man, that's good. I like whoever
that's
wrote
well,
that.
It's well written. That's well written.
I agree with them. You know, I think that I was consulting for a high school program in California this the season before last, before COVID. And Coach Justin got his first varsity job and was taking over a really bad program. He's like, Tyler, what do I do? Like, our team's really bad. I want to keep this job. You know, how do I frame it knowing that we're not going to win very many games? And what I suggested to him from the jump was to redefine success. Every practice, every game, set a success standard that was achievable for them that was different than whether or not they'd win or lose the game. You know, maybe it was a communication goal, or maybe it was an effort goal, or maybe it was a defensive efficiency goal, but like set something that was more in their control, knowing that they didn't necessarily have the talent. He ran with that. And, you know, he was expecting to win one or two games the entire season. But without focusing at all on winning games, just focusing on development over everything, he ended up winning 20 games that season, shocking himself and everybody else. And so he is now a development over everything believer, because a lot of times if you actually change the focus to growth, to just development, you're going to get the success. But too often, if we focus just on the success, we make short-term decisions for a short-term win. And a lot of times, short-term wins come at the expense of long-term growth and development.
What does development over winning look like in a practice setting? Can you give us one or two concrete examples of things that, hey, if I'm a coach, and take whatever level you want. You can talk about high school. You can talk about grade school. What does development over winning look like in a practice setting?
Okay, here's one for youth players specifically, or a youth team. And I'm going youth team as anywhere for like fourth through seventh grade. That's kind of a general youth definition for me. 50% of your practice should be shooting. That's development over everything. Shooting is the hardest skill to come by and the greatest indicator of how long a player is going to be able to play basketball, especially if they're not blessed with unbelievable physical and genetic gifts. And so spending 50% of one's practice time on developing this most important skill would be investing in individual players' long-term development, love of the game. There's really not much else players love about the game of basketball more than seeing the ball go through the hoop. And so that would be fun for them if they just got better at shooting. Now, is that going to necessarily help you defend and transition and win a tournament the coming weekend? Probably not. Probably not. And so that's why it's really hard for coaches not to throw in their offensive and defensive sets or a baseline inbounds play or a press breaker or whatever, because you're probably going to give up some victories. But that would be a concrete example of what development over everything would look like.
Okay, now that dovetails very nicely into number four. Establish first principles. Parents would choose programs for development, not clout. Parents would embrace failure instead of shying away from areas of weakness. Don't sacrifice long-term love of the game for a W. So I think that number three, to me, always goes hand in hand with number four. Because if I'm going to do number three, that means I have to be able to have parents that are educated about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, how it's beneficial for their kid. Because when they walk into a gym with 10 games going on and they look at the scoreboard, that's ultimately what a lot of people end up judging the success or failure of a coach or their kid or the program that they're going to be a part of. So how do we educate parents to choose programs for development?
Yeah. And we'll talk about parents a little bit even more in depth, I think, in a few more points down the road here. But I think that the key is understanding that, you know, you don't choose a program because of their record or how many championships they've won, but rather, can they serve your kid? Can they serve your kid long-term and help them become a great player and a greater person? And I think that, how do we educate parents? Well, there's some you can educate and some you can't. I think that really it's just being very clear about what you're doing. So one thing that I did is for 10 years, I ran my own club. And we got to a place where we had 30 teams and over 300 players in our club. And we grew from a single team. And I attempted to the very best of my ability to live this out. And we saw significant growth. And we didn't always have the best teams or the best records, but we consistently put players in college. And we put players in college because of the long-term development approach. And I think that if parents really did and I think many parents do, at the end of the day, they prioritize their kids' growth and success. They just incorrectly associate that with winning games. And I think that it wouldn't be that hard to provide a value proposition as a club program that we're going to invest in your kid more than we're going to invest in winning games. And I think that's one that parents would just intrinsically buy into if it was communicated correctly. I just don't hear that very often. And I don't see it very often.
Yeah, I don't either. And I do think that if you had some clear messaging, that it would be easier to do that. And it goes back to what you talked about earlier a little bit, where we're trying to, you have to do it almost club by club, individual by individual, where we start to make that the priority, as opposed to trying to do it this all encompassing over the whole entire youth basketball system in the United States. Really challenging, because we know there are a lot of different factors and factions that are involved in that. But if you do it one group at a time, your message gets to and has an impact on one club director or two parents or five players or whatever it is, and those people start to embrace some of these things, and then that's how we can start to slowly make change. That goes along to number five, bamboo mindset. Bamboo will grow for 3 years underground before it shoots up to be one of the fastest growing plants. This must be the approach to youth basketball. Parents, players, and coaches must align and commit to the years long process.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think another thing is what you're doing with this podcast, and, you know, a lot of other good people in basketball like yourself. You know, eventually it will hit a critical mass as more and more people get fed up with parents coming out of the stands and punching referees and right. Their kids kicking the referee. I think you saw that.
Yeah, we saw that. It's crazy.
Oh my goodness, right? But unfortunately, I think like we're seeing in society, sorry to zoom out a little bit here, like we're seeing in society, we're seeing extremism in society, whether you want to talk about politics or you want to talk about societal norms, like more and more people are going towards the edges. And I actually think it's very contrarian and takes a lot of courage to be moderate in today's society, you know, not to, you know, be moderate politically, but just to be in the middle of the road and say like, no, that's crazy over here. And that's crazy over here. Let's find a middle ground. And I really think that's what even this, the bamboo mindset is about. I mean, instant gratification is radicalism. It's on one far side to expect instantaneous results. And it's also kind of radical to just be like, oh, hey, I haven't seen any results for a year. I'm going to stick with it. That's kind of crazy as well, right? Like yep. You're doing something wrong if you're not getting better. But I think understanding that, especially like youth players, I was speaking to a Division I coach yesterday, actually. And this coach has been coaching for 30 years at all levels, ended up at the Division I level. And he was basically preaching the same thing. He said, the greatest responsibility of a coach is to make sure that players don't quit your sport. He said, like, if you're coaching in high school and, you know, you have a freshman that doesn't believe you can help them get better and doesn't think they're getting better, they're just going to quit. And you don't know what that freshman is going to become by the time that they're a senior. And that's really kind of what this bamboo mindset is answering the question that every player is asking themselves, whether they know it or not, when you're coaching them, is like, Like, can you help me get to where I want to go? And if they believe that you can help them, if they see some growth, then eventually they're going to explode up at their appropriate time. And for a lot of players, it's different. And so I think that's what a commitment to the years long process is the commitment to making sure that a player sticks with the process and sticks with the game.
Absolutely. I love that. One of the things that I've kind of taken to heart with my camps is I'll give a little speech to parents at the beginning of camp and at the end when we're having our award ceremony. And I've kind of latched on to a 3-part mission with our camp. Number one, we want you to have fun. Number two, we want you to learn something. And number three, we want the experience that you have at our basketball camp to make you want to play more basketball. And so that's kind of, you talked about trying to figure out how do you define success? And that's kind of how we've come to define success with our basketball camps is, are you learning? Are you having fun? And when it's over, do you want to play more? And I think there's nothing, you know, especially at the youth level, when you think about my experiences, I've coached, I guess, a little higher level AAU travel basketball. And then I've coached recreation basketball too. And one of the things that I always try to evaluate myself on is, okay, when the season's over and the next season rolls around, how many of those kids that played for me in the previous season want to come back and play again? Mm-hmm. And again, everybody likes to win. I get it. But ultimately, when you're 8 years old, you're 10 years old, you're 12 years old, the winning part of it comes way, way down the list of reasons why kids play. And you want them to just keep coming back and playing more and more. And I know we'll talk about this a little bit when we get to developing the love of the game and all that. But I just think it was a good place to throw that in there, that it can't be about what's happening right in the moment. You have to make sure that it's a process that kids can develop over time, because ultimately we all know if you're a basketball person, you know that the people who end up being the best at the game are the people who love it and want to play it because it's important to them, not because it's important to their mom or their dad or their coach or whoever. The kids who really get better and end up being the best players, they do it because they love to do it. And that to me is really what's really important.
You're exactly right. And I'll give you a quick anecdote about that. An NBA player who I won't name, who I got to see firsthand from high school all the way through pro, does not like to play basketball anymore. He's like rarely around the game. And when I asked him about it, he just basically said, he's like, it took so much to get to where I was and took so much sacrifice. He said that I don't love the game anymore. Whereas there's a guy like myself who never played at the NBA level, played in college and a little semi-pro afterwards. I'm 40 years old. I was in the gym this morning doing a shooting workout for an hour because I'm still a gym rat. You know what I mean? But like, but you know, I came to the sport late. I never felt, you know, pressure to perform. I fell in love with the game, and you know, my love has kind of led me through the whole journey. You know, and that's what I want for people. Like, my greatest memories, I won a state championship in high school. I played for a national championship in college. You know, I got to taste professional overseas, and the most joy that I've ever had playing the game has been pick up basketball since I retired at the age of 23, you know, and like, for the past 17 years, I just still love playing pickup. Like, I want that for people, you know, a lifelong love affair at the game.
There's no question. I tell people all the time that, you know, I played and had a really good high school career. I played Division I basketball. And yet some of my most favorite memories are from when I was 15, 16, 17 years old on the playground, playing with guys who were 27, 28, 29, and just having those kinds of experiences. And that's something we could get into, that whole thing, the difference between today's system versus playing pickup basketball. That's a whole nother podcast that we can have. Right. All right, let's move to number six. Otherwise we're going to be here for 7 hours. All right. Yeah. Number six, visual learning. Studies show over 85% of youth are visual learners, yet youth practices are auditory and tactile in nature. Change. Every youth practice and development program must include visual learning. It's more fun, more effective, and provides access to experts. So give us an idea of what you mean when you say coaches should be using visual learning.
Bring a screen onto court. They're very light and flat these days, or a computer screen. And you shouldn't go more than 20 minutes without bringing them over to the screen and showing it to them. Players love, my dad's a professional golfer. You know, has played in majors, played on the PGA Tour. I did not grow up playing golf. I hated it. But I'm a 4 handicap now, and I have a really good swing because I grew up listening to, being around and watching only the best, watching experts, just visually. It's just by osmosis, right? And you have these young players that really don't even watch basketball, don't even know what they're looking for. And they're listening to someone who's not an expert coach, just talk at them and verbally explain what they're supposed to do, who can't even demonstrate it for them. Like, we got to use all these tools, from YouTube to video teaching to film. And they should be looking at a screen and then going out and doing it, and looking at a screen and going out and doing it, because that's how they do video games. That's how they watch YouTube. It's how they learn. So why aren't we using this?
I can honestly say that I have never in my life been at a youth practice where I have seen a screen being used.
Yeah,
I have maybe twice in the time that I've coached youth basketball pulled something up on my phone that I wanted to show to somebody, but I have not done this, and I have certainly not seen anybody else do it. I think it's a great point, especially when you talk about the difference between how kids just what they're interacting with on a daily basis today compared to 10 years ago. Their familiarity with watching things on a screen is, I mean, it's incredible. My own kids, anybody's kids, it's just a totally different way of interacting with the world. And I think to be able to take advantage of that in the youth basketball space makes a ton of sense. So coaches, don't be afraid to pull your screen out and show your kids what it is that you're trying to demonstrate and trying to get them to do. All right, number seven, we kind of touched on a little bit, teach parents. At the youth level, no person has a greater impact on a player's love of the game and improvement than parents. We must educate basketball parents so they stop being the obstacle and become the way. Shout out to Ryan Holiday. Any youth program should have mandatory parent involvement.
Yes. So I did something with my club once a week, where I actually brought the parents out on court to do a father-son, mother-daughter, mother-son, whatever, parent-child workout. And we had some injuries, okay? But we had a ton of fun, and I coached the parents. Those parents that participated were immediately the greatest supporters of the program, were immediately way more empathetic to the challenges, because parents would yell at the kids from the stands.
Absolutely.
Why are you turning it over? And then after they get out there, like, can't walk and dribble, do this that I'm asking them to do. Oh man, the humility was just flowing. And I think it's just more of an approach. Like, coaches hear horror stories about parents from other coaches. Coaches all probably have had their horror stories. And what that's done for a lot of coaches is, like, put a lot of phobia around parents, like they're the enemy. And so, you know, I know that many coaches, especially young coaches, try to keep parents at arm's length. Please don't come into practice. Don't talk to your kid. And they try to, like, push them away because of all the damage that they can do. I think youth programs and youth coaches should embrace parents. They want to be there anyway. They're driving them anyway. At least tell them what they should do. You know, if you have an over-involved parent that's, like, talking too much, give them a job and have them stick to it. Okay. Like, your job is to clap every time someone rebounds and say, great rebound. That's your job. You know, direct their energy, which is probably being misdirected, into at least something positive. And then as you start to teach them, at least they might say something intelligent from the stands instead of shoot it. So I just think it's an approach to embrace instead of hold at arm's length.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we've heard that from several different successful high school coaches where they've gone from, hey, I tried to do exactly what you said. I tried to keep the parents out of my hair, tried to keep them out of the program. I want to have as little to do with them as I possibly can. And that ended up creating more problems, because then you had this lack of communication. And when I really embraced them and brought them in and gave them something to do and made them feel a part of the program, it made it much easier, one, to avoid problems, but two, if there were problems, now we've already established a positive rapport and a relationship that enables us to have a more rational discussion than if the first time you ever talk to a parent is when you're having these issues with playing time or whatever it might be. If that's the first time you've talked to someone, that conversation is going to be a lot more difficult than it is if it's somebody that for the last 3 months you've been engaged with them in a positive way. It becomes a lot easier to be able to have that first difficult conversation. So bring your parents into your program, whether you're a high school coach, a youth coach. A great idea. I love doing the parent-child stuff out on the court and creating a little bit of humility. I think that would be, yes. and plus I'm sure it was entertaining for coaches as well. Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com. All right, number eight, discovery method, part one. Youth structure should be about discovery and constraint. With varied games, unique problems, youth players can achieve creativity. The secret sauce of great basketball players is cleverness and creativity. All right, so explain what you mean.
Okay, so most youth practices, most practices in general, have a lot of structure. Okay, now we're going to do three-man weave, and here's how you do three-man weave, and you got to do it just this way. That doesn't foster creativity in a player. It fosters following direction, whereas all the best players are the most creative ones, the ones that are game changers. When Steve Nash changed the game, now Steph Curry changed the game, it's because they didn't conform, they actually reformed. And so I think what we want to, one of the most valuable skills we want to see in players is creative problem solving, not the ability to follow direction. So what does it look like? Maybe it looks like you blow up a bunch of balloons and partner them up and say, your job is to get the balloon from this baseline to that baseline without traveling and without the balloon hitting the ground. Go, right? So you're still going to get ball handling, vision, passing, you know, as well as communication, but you didn't give them the method. So I think it's really discovery method is about not giving the method. Discovery method is about giving an objective and letting them come up with however they want it to get there. Right. Or say, hey, we're going to play 5-on-5 to 5. Any shot you take from the paint's worth 3. Any shot you take outside of the paint is worth a half. Go. Right. Now they're going to figure out a way to do it. You know, so whatever it is, like, put some constraint on it, but let them discover it and actually talk less and give them method less.
And I think most coaches find that, especially if you try to do it for the first time, find that difficult to talk less and to let kids discover on their own. Because as coaches, I think we tend to want to quote coach, right, teach, which is us talking. It's not the kids discovering. And you have somebody sitting on the sidelines who's watching that and saying, well, why isn't this guy coaching? What are they doing? They're just standing there watching. They've set up this system and then they're letting the kids discover. And it's a difficult thing. I think teachers face that same challenge, that the old method of just standing in front of people and lecturing, especially in today's society with kids, doesn't work. And it's not as successful as transferring learning. So being able to set up a system of discovery and constraint and putting them in position, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, about being able to experiment and become creative. I think that's one of the things that, because we play so many games with referees and with parents in the stands and people watching and a scoreboard, that the creativity that kids used to find out in the driveway or down at the playground, that's I think where we lose out on that cleverness and creativity, because they're never getting to do things in a situation where somebody isn't evaluating them, even if it's just their parent on the car ride home telling them what they should or shouldn't have done. So I couldn't agree more with that one. Number nine, discovery method. Our youth system is not set up for that, as we put players in positions require performance and punish experimentation. Set goals, establish guardrails, and let them create. This is the basis for elite performance, not passing and catching with two hands. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what I see here is a situation where it's kind of that old theory of learning is messy. If you want to put kids in two lines and get them to do the same thing over and over and over again, it's easy to get pretty good at that drill. But if you're going to have them actually figure out how to play, that doesn't look quite as pristine.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's probably a part, the ratio of practices to games, which at the youth level, it's kind of 1-to-1. You know, you'll probably have one practice to one game. You know, if you have two practices in a week and then on the weekend, you have, you know, 2-to-4 games. And so that's why it's not set up for that, because games require performance as it's currently set up. You know, and then I also think that, you know, the desire for winning, when someone makes a mistake, from experimentation on the court, right? They try to make a pass that they're not strong enough to make and they throw it away, or they, you know, try something crazy like a behind the back pass and it goes out of bounds. Players tend to get benched immediately, right? That's a performance kind of based decision where, and that punishes experimentation. And so I think another part of the system we're trying to create here is one that actually celebrates experimentation and, you know, is attempting to get equal amounts of play time for all, not just playing time, but play time for all.
I agree. I think that free play and that ability to try stuff is something that's lacking. I always think about, I started out, my son is a freshman now. We started out with him in third grade with a team, and my coach, my assistant coach and I, we talked about, well, how can we make sure that our kids can work on their weak hand, and how can we encourage them to do that? And one of the things that we decided right from the very beginning was that anytime they shot the ball with their weak hand, so for most players on the left side, like, we want you to shoot with your left hand. I don't care if it bounces off your head. I don't care if you drop it out of bounds, it hits the bottom of the backboard. Every single time you do that, whether it's in a game or it's in practice, we're going to cheer, we're going to clap, we're going to say, hey, great job. And by the time those kids were in fifth grade, they could all shoot layups with their weak hand because they knew that they could try it. And again, that's a very simple example of experimentation. It's not really talking about creativity, but it is an example of how you can just make sure that you're getting something that is a long-term look. If we'd have told them, hey, only shoot the ball with your strong hand, we might've got better. We might've got better results and more made layups when they were in third grade, but later on we would have hurt their development. I think that's really what we're talking about here, is making sure that we're looking at the long-term. All right. Implement immediately. Number 10, any teaching to youth players must provide space and time for them to implement right away. This should be a practice and play structure. When your practice looks like play and your play looks like development, that's youth basketball done right.
Mm-hmm. So oftentimes coaches teach too much. So I'll go to a youth practice or even a high school practice, and I'll take a peek at the coach's practice plan. And it's an entire page long with many sub points for each drill or section of their practice. I went to a Duke practice a few years ago. I'm sitting in the stands. Coach K hands us his practice plan, and it had three things on it for the entire practice. Right. And so I think that's just kind of the indicator, like the more experienced coaches are more simple. And, you know, a common youth coach will say multiple things and then go play. And when one thing goes wrong, stop and start talking again. Right. So if you're like, concurrent feedback is the worst form of feedback. Pass to Johnny, be strong with the basketball, throw it to Timmy. Timmy, shoot it. Like, that's concurrent feedback. They need to actually hear one thing and then go implement it immediately. Because think about, you know, anytime we learn something, we didn't learn it when we heard it. We learned it when we did it for the first time. And so, like, we got to understand that learning takes place in the doing, not in the hearing.
Absolutely. All right. Number 11 and number 12 kind of go together. Number 11 is play games. Number 12, play the right game. So more about practice and play. The majority of youth practice should be games. Three keys: keep it short, don't teach until after, use constraints to direct desired outcomes. And then underneath play the right games, youth basketball should prioritize movement, ball touches, scoring, learning, and fun. The right games are three-on-three FIBA style, small-sided games in practice, skill games every day. So just maybe give us some examples of some things that if somebody's a youth coach that you could implement into their practices right away.
Yeah. Well, I'll go bigger than smaller. Here's bigger. I would actually suggest that all basketball, seventh grade and younger, should be played 3-on-3.
Amen.
I wouldn't even play 5-on-5. So, I mean, that would be a big societal change, right? And the reason being, it's easier to score 3-on-3 than 5-on-5. And that's a lot more fun. They've got more space. They've got more time. They'll touch the ball more because there's two less players on the floor. And 3-on-3 games are a lot faster and they're doing ball things more. They're not running back and forth. All right. So we could talk about that forever. That's a whole
other Absolutely.
But then, okay, let's talk about, all right, playing games in practice. Drills are more effective when players have a lot of context. Drills are less effective when players don't have very much context, meaning they haven't had a lot of game reps. Young players have not had a lot of game reps, and so they have really a big challenge with transference, transferring a drill to a game situation. It just doesn't work very well. So playing more games in practice allows them to get more valuable and relevant experience so that when feedback or when a drill is done, it might actually have some sort of an impact. Kids have a very short attention span. So when we're playing these games, we want to keep them real short. We already talked about how concurrent feedback is the worst sort of feedback. It's taking all their attention just to catch the ball and not break their nose. So stop teaching them in the middle of it. You're actually distracting them from doing anything. Wait until after the game and teach a little bit. Then if you want something, use some sort of constraint to direct your desired outcome. If you want players to move around more without the basketball, take away dribbles. They'll have to move around in order to get the ball. So use constraints to teach instead of your voice. And so all of those type of games, like 3-on-3 and small sided games with constraint, those are the right types of games.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And I think that it's one of the ways that I think basketball is changing in this direction. I think this is one of the places that we are making progress, at least in the practices that I see and the things that people that I talk to. I see a lot more people using games to teach the game as opposed to just running out drills. And that's one thing that I do think we're making progress on. We're not quite where we need to be, but I do think people are starting to recognize that in order to learn how to play the game, you actually have to play the game and not just drill. And that goes to number 13, explore the edges of the sandbox, encourage the crazy. The game changes and typically youth basketball is 20 years behind. Instead, youth basketball should be at the forefront of the movement. There is no better place to experiment with style and skills.
Yeah, I mean, give me your take on that. I mean, you're really plugged in. Would you agree that youth basketball tends to be behind the edge, or have you seen something different?
No, I think it's behind. I mean, I do think that there's times where you look at it and you're like, why are we still doing X, Y, or Z out there on the court? Why are we still playing zone defense? Why are we not shooting more threes if we have – the one thing – here's what I would say. The thing that when I read this – the thing that I would go to is what you said a second ago. I am constantly advocating for, look, if you really wanted to develop players, then we would have everything would be 3-on-3 instead of 5-on-5 up through, again, pick whatever grade level you want, 6th grade, 7th grade, 5th grade, whatever. Those younger kids don't need to be spending all that time running up and down a high school floor where, you know, 75% of their time is spent jogging instead of actually playing basketball. So that's number one. And then number two, I was just having this discussion with somebody the other day. Why can't we lower the basket? Like, I'm coaching right now fifth grade girls. And so we play a game, and you know, maybe a team scores 25 points in a 30-minute stop clock game, let's say. But imagine if they were playing on an 8.5-foot basket.
Yep.
How many more points they would score? How many more girls would go home happy? How many parents would go home happier because they saw their child make a basket? Like, why can't we do that? Like, why can't we do something like that? It wouldn't be that hard to implement. I know there's some gyms where you don't have adjustable baskets, and there's obviously times where you couldn't do it, but we certainly could do it very easily. And I have no idea what the argument would be against it. If you're going to tell me, well, eventually they got to shoot a 10-foot basket. Well, a fifth grade girl and LeBron James should not be shooting a basketball on the same basket. So yeah, I think there are things that we could do that would be outside the box, but I don't know if you really think about it, if they are outside the box, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. They're just different than how we're doing them now.
Correct.
And I think it's just like an openness to prioritize the player's success and experience over, you know, 5-on-5 basketball. This is the game.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Number 14, intrinsic motivation. Most practices I've seen have a coach constantly yelling and telling players to move faster, care more, and do a thing. Coach motivation is a hell of a drug, creating addicts for life. We don't want addicts. We want athletes, self-motivated ones at that. And I touched on that a second ago when I said the kids who are eventually going to be the best players are the ones who they internalize it. They care. They want to get better. It's not because their mom wants them to get better, or their coach, or their dad, or their cousin. It's because they have that internal drive to want to be a good player.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I said the hell of a drug because it's crazy. I work with so many high school and college players now, and we're in a workout and they're like, can you get on me a little bit more? Can you yell at me a little bit more? Like, they're asking me. And I'm like, no, I actually won't, because that's not serving you. Like, if you need that, then you're never going to be great. And I think it's a product of, just having had that for their entire career. And so I think it's just so important to have athletes do tough things and get through it on their own. I mean, I'm trying to do that with my kids right now. I have a 5 and an 8-year-old, and that we have a bunch of kids that I train once a week. And every single week, we haven't gotten through a training session without at least one person crying. And it's not because I'm yelling, because I don't talk very much at all. It's just because I ask them to do really hard things, you know, and someone walks off crying, and I love it. Because they have to learn to manage those emotions and overcome, you know, the frustration and get back on the court and achieve it, because no one's allowed to quit. Like, you have to finish it no matter how long it takes you. And I think that resilience is what we should be teaching youth basketball players.
Yeah, it's really important. Yeah, it's really important. And I think that it's hard when we don't, you know, when you give kids an opportunity, it's hard to not want to step in and make it easier for them, both as a coach, you talked about, as a parent. We always want to kind of smooth that path ahead of them instead of watching them struggle. And so often as parents, that's a difficult thing to do, is to watch our kids struggle, and coaches feel the same way. And so we want to make things easier. Instead, you got to get them right up to the edge of that comfort zone so that you're pushing them to the point where it is a struggle. And they have to understand that if you want to be good, again, this could translate, it's not just basketball, that translates to anything in life. You want to be good at something, it's going to be a struggle. You and I talked about this podcast before we jumped on here. Mm-hmm. And I talked about how at the beginning it was a struggle figuring out the technology, trying to make sure that I wasn't saying every other word, and all those things that go along with you trying to improve your craft. And mm-hmm. it applies in every single walk of life. And if you can learn that from sports, you can learn that from basketball, man, what a great thing that we're doing for our kids. Because ultimately, there's not very many people that are going to get a chance to make a living playing basketball, but there's a lot of people that are going to play basketball that are then going to go on and make a living doing something else. And if we can use basketball to be able to help them that part of their life, then we're really, really doing something. Which goes to number 15, autonomy. Players care more about what they choose. In a given practice, game, or training, let them choose their position. Let them choose the game, the score, the color of their jersey. Practice autonomy in youth basketball, and they will build a career on self-governance. So just give us an idea of what you mean there. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but just fill in a couple of details there.
I'll just give two thoughts for parents and coaches that hopefully are listening. A youth coach should be a guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. If you got to be the sage on the stage, if it's about you and youth basketball, you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. And I think the second piece is, why demand a change in 12 children when a small change in yourself could make all the difference? You know, I mean, whether it be like the name of the team or what game goes first or how many points you play, you know, like they will feel more ownership over that, which they get to choose. So give up all the small things. And I think you'll find that you get a lot more engagement and a lot more fun.
Totally true. I try to always give up the cheer when we break the timeout huddle. That's one of the things that I always assign. Like, first day, I'm like, okay, your homework tonight is figure out what the team cheer is going to be when we leave the timeout. And there's, I mean, I've had some good ones, and I've had some paragraphs. I'm like, do we really want to spend 25 seconds saying this particular thing? Maybe we can tweak it a little bit and make it a little shorter just so we can break the timeout before before it's supposed to be over. But anyway, those are just examples of things that you can do that kids, they gravitate to that stuff. And when it's mm-hmm. theirs and it's not something that's dictated by an adult, as you said, they care more about it and it becomes more important to them. Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit snapraise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
Number 16. Give advantage. Basketball is hard. It takes a long time to get good. We like things we improve in. Youth basketball needs advantages, not obstacles. We've already talked basically about all these 10-foot goals, big heavy balls, 94-foot courts, and lots of people make it hard. Give kids a chance, build in advantages. So we've talked about pretty much all of those at some point here already.
We did. I think I would just add this, like, in practice, most of your games should be advantage games. So 3-on-1 games, 3 offensive players, 1 defensive player. Let them be successful. 1-on-1 advantage games where the defender has to start grossly disadvantaged or play with their eyes closed. I mean, we need to make it easy for players at the beginning. It'll get hard enough.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Number 17, no excuses. Youth basketball is full of excuses, often modeled by adults. Make it a no excuses space. These excuses are often a result of wrong-minded goals. Change the goal from a status-driven one to a development-driven one and watch the excuses evaporate.
I mean, that would be the number one principle or lesson that I think should be the goal of every youth basketball coach or youth basketball program. Let's take radical ownership. You know, let's teach players to take radical ownership. I know my 5-year-old daughter, we were dribbling around last night in the living room, and she said, "That's not fair," to me 2 or 3 times when I was asked. She said, "That's not fair. That's not fair." And we had a come to Jesus moment, me and my 5-year-old daughter, in that moment. And I just think that, you know, society is full of excuses and blame and accusations, right? And this is what youth basketball should be teaching, is just take responsibility. Life's not fair. Don't expect it to be.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I always come back to, I've coached at the youth level, and one of the things that always happens inevitably is you run up against a team that is a lot better than you, that presses you the whole game and continues to press until the very last second. And I'll oftentimes have parents come up to me after games that I can't believe they did that. Or a kid on my team will say, "Why did they keep pressing you when they're winning?" And my response to that is always, look, as a coach, I personally wouldn't do that. But if you don't like that happening to you, then you have to get better. And, you know, it's not always easy for people to hear, but the reality is that if you don't want people to beat you on the floor, then you got to figure out ways to improve and continue to get better. And I could make an excuse and say, well, they, you know, this or that, but the reality is you just have to rise up to meet those challenges. And that goes to number 18, level up. Competitiveness is a skill to grow, even more so than technical skills. Measurement is magic. Measure everything, keep score, test and test again, recognize and reward them as they level up. Video games shouldn't be more addicting than basketball. Level up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the dopamine hits from on video games, right? Your character levels up, or you know, beat a boss or whatnot, and there's like ding, 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 and there's stars, and like that's hit, and then you want to get the next one. You just look to the next level. You know, why don't we have that for player development? You know, I do this with all of the kids that I train. Is I've got, you know, 5 skills, I've got 5 levels for each skill, and I've got scores that they've got to hit. And when they level up, they get a band, you know, almost like belts in karate. That is what's addicting. And I think just by scoring stuff, you know, they want to do one more turn, one more attempt. And that's what we want, right? Is we want them to fall in love with the process of getting better.
Absolutely. All right. I have a personal question, because this is one of the things that I always struggle with as a coach who maybe doesn't have an assistant. And so I want to be able to measure or keep track of things. And I always find that once I start trying to measure and keep track of things, either I kind of lose track of what's going on in the practice, or I have to kind of keep an eye on what's going on in the practice, and then I lose track of trying to measure things. So do you have a tip for maybe a singular coach out there, how they can keep track of something that can do kind of what you're describing here?
Yeah. So here, I'll just make it super easy. Hit me with a DM on Twitter at Tyler Coston, TylerCoston, or email me at coachtylercoston@gmail.com, and I'll send you my basketball decathlon. It is, because I think, you know, what you're talking about is statting games or statting competitions or whatever. Whereas this is a 10-minute individual skill development decathlon that you can do in 10 minutes with your entire team. Players keep score for each other, knowing that they'll mess it up terribly. That's they keep score for each other. And then you can do it once a week or once every 2 weeks. And it's done in 10 minutes, and I'll send it to you. And that's a great just kind of starter kit for how you can score things and level.
Perfect. Coaches, make sure you do that. All right. Number 19, challenge. European Premier League soccer clubs found resiliency a greater indicator of elite success than any technical skills. This must be a priority for youth basketball. Dose youth players with appropriate challenge, attainable but not easy. This grows the resilience.
Yeah. I mean, bond before you battle And I think a lot of times we provide outs, excuses, shortcuts for youth players where they can handle a lot more than I think we even know. And so just do hard things, ask them to do hard things. And it doesn't have to be running. You know, it can be, yeah, you know, make X amount of layups in a row as a group, or, you know, get to a certain level of communication or whatnot. But continue to level up the challenge and, you know, name it in your practice. And so everybody knows it's coming. And I mean, that creates bonding and connection as well as doing really, really hard things and sitting back and having them figure it out. That's what I would suggest, is like, just have a part of your practice where they have to do really hard things that they don't quit.
Yeah. I always have that conversation with my own kids when it comes to not just basketball, but to anything. And I always tell them that anything that you're going to want to do in life that's worth doing, that you're going to enjoy, is going to be a challenge. If stuff is super easy, you're going to get bored with that really fast and you're going to have a boring life. You want to have things in front of you that are a challenge, and you want to be able to figure out how to rise and meet that challenge. So resiliency obviously is key. All right, number 20, show the love. After the game, show the love. Parents, just remember, you love your kid and you show it by saying, I love to watch you play. Coaches, just remember, you love to teach the game and you show it by saying less and smiling more. Players, just show you love the game and show it by loving the whole journey. Stay up. And what, here's something that came to mind when I read this. I had someone say to me, and I can't even remember now who the person was that said it to me, but I was sitting with them in the stands at a high school game. This was a couple of years ago. And they turned to me and they said, why do some of these parents even want to come to the games? They're so miserable during the games. They're yelling at the refs. They're yelling at their kid. They're yelling at the coaches. They constantly have a frown on their face. They're not happy. Why are they so invested in something that makes them so miserable? And I think that's something that I've tried to adopt in my own life, both as a coach and even probably more importantly as a parent, that when I'm sitting in the stands, I mean, I want my kids to do well. I want them to win just like anybody else, but ultimately it's about them. And I want them to know that I'm proud of them regardless of what happens out there on the court. And that's something just to keep in mind as we talk about this particular topic. So go ahead and fill in.
I don't even think I need to fill in. I think that's great. I think that's great. I mean, I think you show you care, not by how upset and frustrated you get, right? You show your care by having an outward focus. I think at the end of the day, it's, are you being selfish or not? You know, like that anger and frustration is really just selfish, because it's sucking energy and sucking joy out of the whole experience for everybody else. You know, it's just what you're feeling.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah. So I would just say, you show you love by how you spread the love and make it enjoyable for others.
And I will say, as a caveat, that that is hard to do at times. If you are if you are a competitive person and you are sitting in the stands watching your kid, or you're going to a practice or watching your child try to do something, or maybe you want them to go a little bit harder, or maybe you wish that they would go to a couple more workouts a week, it is hard to sit back and remember that it is about them and not about you. But I can tell you from firsthand experience of my own kids to this point that ultimately they're going to find basketball or not find basketball, as the case may be, because, as we've said, that they are intrinsically motivated, and you want them to find something that they love, regardless of if it's the same thing that you love or not. And that's really important. And sometimes, as I said, it's hard to do as a parent. It's not the easiest thing. All right. So we're going to wrap up here. We're going to go back to number two, and I'm just going to read the statement: youth basketball is broken. Start over. So let's ask this final question. If we were going to start over, what's the 1 minute spiel on what youth basketball would look like if Tyler Costin could design the youth basketball system here in the United States from scratch? Give us the 1 minute elevator pitch of what that would look like.
All right. It's going to be radical. Here we go. 5-point plan. Point one, no one actually plays organized basketball before fourth grade. That's radical. Okay. Point number two, fourth through seventh grade is only played 3-on-3, half court, no 5-on-5 in organized basketball until after seventh grade. Point three, they're playing with smaller balls on lower hoops that graduates as they get older. Point number four is we invest heavily, whether it be from a club
or from individuals or from NBA teams. We invest heavily in having a technical director over a region or over an organization that is going to set a standard for what is taught and how it's taught. And lastly, if you want to sign your kid up as a parent, there's required parent involvement in either education or going through workouts with them so that you can be a part of the journey and not a part of the problem.
That's fantastic. It's great stuff. I think as we've talked about throughout this episode, that probably can, will, and is able to be started at the grassroots level, one person, one coach, one organization mm-hmm. at a time. And as people start to see the benefits and all those things that you just said and that we talked about over the course of the last hour, hopefully anybody who's coaching out there, whether you're a high school coach, a college coach, a youth coach, whether you're a parent, hopefully you take at least some of the things that we've talked about and begin to try to implement them into what you do. All that being said, Tyler, I cannot thank you enough for spending an hour of your time with us today to kind of go through those 20 ways that we can improve youth basketball. It's been a pleasure getting a chance to go back and forth with you and talk about some of the things that honestly have been themes that have run through what we've talked about here on the podcast and that I've tried to do when I talk to people outside of my official capacity as a podcast host. So thank you, first of all, for writing the article. You put a lot of great things out there that I've read and shared with people over the years. It was a pleasure to be able to have you on. Thank you so much for being a part of it today. Before we get out, once again, share how people can reach out to you on social media, share your email, and then I'll come back in and wrap things up.
Perfect. Well, you know, even as you were talking, I am committed to doing this and not just talking about it. And so if you're someone that wants to do this, you want to run a youth 3-on-3 league, or you want some help with your youth program, that's what I'm committed to doing over the next 10 years, is being a part of the solution. I want to help you. That's on my heart. And I want to help you get it done. And I want to help many people get it done. So reach out to me at Tyler Coston, TylerCoston on Twitter. My DMs are open. I put out a bunch of content on Twitter. Or you can head to TylerCoston.com and you can get on my newsletter there, or just email me directly, CoachTylerCoston@gmail.com. And I want to help you run a 3-on-3 league or improve a youth program or just improve you as a youth coach. That's what I'm about.
Fantastic. Tyler, again, thank you so much for being a part of it. To everyone out there who is listening, please try to implement some of the things we talked about. Please reach out to Tyler. I know he'll be a tremendous resource for anybody who is looking to make changes in their youth basketball program and in the youth basketball system. And we appreciate you listening to this episode, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.